Some are spooky for Halloween at night. Some are just plain fun for the family by day. They are corn mazes, and they're all over Wisconsin. And we're going to check them out this hour of Wisconsin Weekend on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Wisconsin corn mazes spread across acres. They're full of twists and turns, dead ends that will frustrate even for people who are endowed with that internal GPS. Angie Trinan and her husband Alan own Trinan Farm. That includes a corn maze that covers 15 acres. The corn maze sits on land that's been in the Trinan family for nearly a century. Angie, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here.
Well, so let's just establish the clear definition of a corn maze and what this living puzzle is all about.
Well, as the name implies, you start with a cornfield. And it is, you know, generally has to be a large enough acreage so that you can cut trails into it and visitors can explore the corn maze. So you cut the field into a design. Some people will do a kind of abstract kind of thing, but having a great photo from overhead is part of the experience, although when you're actually in the corn maze, it is trails of corn, you know, tunnels almost, that you're in. So you can't see the design unless you take a photo from above.
And some corn mazes give you maps and a flag, I guess, if you're really stuck and like, hey, okay, I give up, surrender flag, right?
Well, yes. There's many ways to give your visitors an experience in the corn maze. Sometimes you give them a map. You can have checkpoints in the maze where there might be a decision. You have to decide to go left or right based on a question you have. So a lot of corn maze operators will give you a little card that has questions, and it would say, when you get to decision point number one, do you go left or right based on your answer? Ideally trying to correctly answer the question. Mm-hmm. In our corn maze, we do it a little differently. We give you a partial map to the maze. You get a little bit of the maze on your map. The rest is blank.
And you
have to navigate. So ours is like really a map reading challenge, not as much a wandering around kind of thing. And then you put your map together. It's essentially a puzzle. So you navigate to 7 different locations in the maze. And in each one, you'll find a mailbox with a piece of the map. So you tape it onto your map. Your piece of paper, and then you can find your way to the next one. And then once you have a complete map, you can find your way out.
What led you and your family to this endeavor?
Well, my husband and I, my husband has farmed his whole life, and he also likes horses. So back in the early 90s, maybe even earlier than that, he purchased a team of draft horses. And he started a little side business of planting about a half acre of pumpkins to start and giving people hay rides out to the pumpkin patch to pick pumpkins. And he was doing that when I met him. So through the 90s, that's what the thing was. We started to think, though, well, maybe if there were more things for people to do, then, you know, we could charge a little extra for them to do something else. And corn mazes had started to be a thing. In 1998, I believe, was the first maze in Wisconsin. And I think in 95, it was the first one in the U.S.
Wow. So we're going on 20 years and more.
Yeah. And, you know, once we got the idea, we heard about it, essentially. So then we went to visit a corn maze. And it was a hot day. It was a really hot day. It was August. And my husband's farmed his whole life. So the idea of paying to walk in a field of corn, it was a little painful at first because we were just, you know, like, well, you know, it was like $5. And we had a 2-year-old with us, and we did not enjoy it. I mean, we were like hot and sticky, and I, you know, 5 minutes into it, I'm like, I got to get out of here. The baby's crying. And so our first experience was no one is going to pay to walk in a cornfield. However, we got past
that. Your husband's
that.
Like, this is wasted money.
Exactly. Like, the idea that for a farmer to like pay someone else to be in their cornfield. However, we didn't let go of the idea just based on our personal experiences. We went to a conference where...
Wait, a corn maze conference?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, there's corn maze conferences. There's a conference for everything, right? I mean, so, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, educational opportunities for people who run corn mazes and other fall businesses, or actually other businesses who invite customers
value
to come directly.
Added.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Value added farming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. So here you are. What was your first year? When was the first year you tried it out?
The first year was in...
Much to your husband's chagrin.
Right. Well, he was pretty excited about it. Just we were both a little like, oh, how's this going to go? 2001 was our first year of the corn maze. And we really thought, well, we already have these people coming out to do a wagon ride and get a pumpkin. Well, you know, maybe they'd stay a little longer. But the demographic was really different. So... going out to the pumpkin patch with the hayride is, you know, a lot of parents and grandparents and littler kids. I mean, everybody enjoys it, but those are the people who come back. You're like, oh, we got to get the kids out there and get some pictures. So the corn maze is actually more appealing to slightly older families with slightly older kids, teenagers, and adults. So we started attracting people who, you know, maybe they came when their kids were little and then stopped coming, or just, you know, friends getting together, that kind of thing. It's a pretty big undertaking if you have small kids. So that's
because of the walking,
right?
Yeah,
and it's, I mean, although there's many ways for people to get out of our maze once they're in, it's we say, you know, if your kids are under 7 or 8, you might want to just kind of consider that it's a lot of walking. And you know,
I think I read in your corn maze this year you could trek up to 6 miles.
There's probably close to 6 miles of trails in there. So if you walked up and down every single trail, which we try to get people to do, because in addition to the map, we have secret locations, and they're secret. They're not on the map. So, and you get little prizes if you find, you know, at least 4 of the 10. So that it, some people will not leave the maze until they have found all of those 10 locations.
Of course, mm-hmm. Those type A personalities out there. You need like a sponsorship from a step counting
That's a great idea.
Company, right? Yeah.
Hold on. Let me try to remember that.
We're talking right now with Angie Trinan and her husband, Alan, who own Trinan Farm. That includes a corn maze. It covers 15 acres. They're based in Lodi, and their corn maze sits on land that's been in their family for nearly a century. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you want to ask about planning and planting a corn maze? There are conferences you can go to, but you also have an expert right here with Angie who can answer your questions. Do you have a good idea for a corn maze design? Have you ever been to a corn maze? What's the best part? What's your favorite memory of running around in a corn maze? 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Angie, walk us through the planning process. When do you start the year in planning this?
Well, at the end of each season, we have a little meeting and say, okay, you know, what went well, what didn't go well, you know, any ideas. But we spend like the winter and the early spring kind of like recovering from our busy season and, you know, getting ramped up. The as far as the corn maze goes, I have to do the design, obviously, before the corn gets growing. So I usually start in April and May starting to brainstorm about what's it going to be. And we do take input from customers. We get a lot of great ideas. But ultimately, I have to sit down and be like, okay, what's it going to be? And I want it, so I've got some parameters. I want it to be recognizable immediately. So when you take a look at the photo, you have some idea of what it is. Because some maze designs can be really, you kind of have to look at them for a little while. Like, oh, what is that, you know? But I want ours to have a central figure that is pretty immediately recognizable. And it also has to be a good maze so customers have a good experience in there. So I start doing the design.
What does that mean, though? Like, you know, what kind of maze gives customers a good experience?
Well, we have learned that having long dead ends is terrible because people get frustrated and then they'll just cut right through the corn. And then that, you know, kind of ruins some of the effect of having the trails in there. We like it so there's many ways to get from one place to the other. So you can kind of strategize and say, oh, this group's going to take this way and this group's going to take that way. And, like curving paths that intersect with other curving paths are very challenging, so we want to include a lot of that. So it's hard enough. We also have some trails are 5 feet wide and some trails are 10 feet wide, so you can see that on the map and you can get a little oriented that way. And we want it to be beautiful, you know. So there's a lot of things that kind of go into.
Do you hand draw the design then?
No.
Or on a computer?
I do it on a graphic design program. I use Adobe Illustrator to do the design. I don't really know how to use it. I just know how to design a corn maze on it. So.
Well, you know, you get that's what gets the job done.
Right, right.
For many people, a favorite family tradition in October is getting lost in a corn maze, and getting found again is always good. We're navigating corn mazes around Wisconsin this hour with Angie Trinan. Angie and her husband, Alan, own Trinan Farm in Lodi. Her corn maze covers 15 acres, and she's behind the design and the execution, which is what we're learning about. Join in at 800-642-1234. Where is your favorite corn maze in Wisconsin? Do you have a family tradition at a particular corn maze? Let us know at 800-642-1234. You can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll be back after this news update. In Wisconsin, the corn is as high as an elephant's eye. That's a line from the song, Oh, What a Beautiful Morning, in the musical Oklahoma. The higher the better for corn mazes. Make sure we get good and lost and found. We're talking corn mazes this hour with Angie Trinan. She's owner of Trinan Farm. Her family's corn maze spreads out 15 acres in Lodi. Angie designs the maze and runs the business. Join in at 800-642-1234. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's now take a call now. Mike in Marshfield. Go ahead, Mike.
Good morning. It's great to hear the show.
Good. Go ahead.
I have kind of a weird story, actually, about corn maze. I worked in broadcasting for a while. We actually had a contest since I went out of my way to make sure like no one ever saw me in person. For about the first year that I worked on the air, I would hire interns to wear my name tag and stuff like that. And we finally had this contest in a corn maze. If you find me, you win $100. And while I'm in the corn maze, I'm also broadcasting too. What I didn't realize is that when I got completely lost, I mean, I actually saw them cut the thing, but I still got lost. I didn't realize that my mic was hot, and the people at the station recorded everything that I was saying and then played it for everybody at our Christmas party.
So you were doing a live remote from a corn maze.
Yeah, I used to do kind of weird stuff occasionally. That's not the weirdest, but... completely lost, and you hear me going, oh, geez, I'm going to miss my break, and you hear me yelling for help, like, hey, is there anybody out here?
Oh, do you still go to corn mazes after this debacle?
I went one more time when they had a haunted corn maze, and the scariest thing that they actually had was a fake deer head that they would stick out of the grass or out of the corn when you're walking by and just scare the you-know-what out of you. It was scarier than anything else they had to, like, just be walking through there and all of a sudden there's this deer staring at you. Because they did warn people occasionally that the cows from their other field would get into the corn maze and sometimes get lost. So.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for those remembrances. Angie, do you have many customers who get lost in the maze?
Well, when customers come out, I usually ask them, did you get lost? And if they say no, I'm like, well, I'm clearly going to have to make it harder next year because I want people to get at least a little lost, maybe just the right amount, you know, not so that they're like, you know, crying or just so frustrated that they're upset. But being a little lost is great. And on a busy day, there's lots of people in there, so you can help each other out a little bit.
So we left off where you design and illustrator this corn maze. And this year is the trilobite theme. How do you get that trilobite then in the field?
That's my husband's job. So once I have the design complete, I hand him the design, print it out, and I put a grid over the top of it. And that grid will correspond to what he's done in the field, which is to plant the corn in a grid. So he'll plant the rows essentially north and south, east and west. So as opposed to just the rows, how you would normally grow corn. And once the corn starts coming up, there's essentially a grid growing in the field. So he will stake out that field so that you can essentially count rows and stakes, figure out where you're at in the field relative to the plan. And once you find where a trail is, they will paint it on the ground and then till it out with a tractor and tiller to make the paths.
So the dirt paths.
The dirt paths, yep. So that's where the corn has been removed, basically.
Right. Is there any other special equipment you're using to sculpt these designs?
We are actually literally just using the map, flags and stakes, and a tiller. First we mow the paths, then we till them. Many people will use a GPS. It's a really good way to make a corn maze. And that requires some specialized equipment and it's kind of a setup to do that.
And we heard about a software company that makes corn mazes.
There are numerous companies who will come and, first of all, they'll design your corn maze and they'll come and cut it for you, which is often a really good way to go for a business that wants to do a corn maze. But partly because I really like the creative part of developing the maze design and the theme. And also, we've always cut the maze by hand, and we've always been a little worried that the level of detail would not come through on the GPS method. So we get a lot of our young staff members out. It takes us about 2 to 3 days to get it cut into the field with several crews working. So,
well, how did you arrive at the trilobite this year?
Wow, that's an interesting story. normally, I just work with myself and try to figure out what I want the design to be. Like last year, it was killer baby unicorns.
Yeah,
which was pretty big hit. This year, I got an email in April from Rich Slaughter and Brooke Norstedt at the UW-Madison Geology Museum. And they said, hey, we've come out year after year. We love your maze, and we think you should do a trilobite. And I was like, okay, well, first of all, I paid attention to the email because I love the Geology Museum. I used to go there a lot with my kids, and it's such a great, it's a small museum, but it's free, and it's really, really awesome. Second, I thought the trilobite was a good idea because I knew what it looked like. It's kind of a bug-like with lots of legs and things, and it's a fossil, essentially. My big concern was that I'd say trilobite, and nobody would know what I was talking about. And so that would sort of violate my rule of, a design that people can tell what it is.
Accessible.
Right. But then I went down to visit them. We talked, and I was just like, yes, I need to work with the Geology Museum. They are so enthusiastic. They got so many ideas. This could be really great. I had to get over the mental block of people aren't going to know what a trilobite is. Kids kind of do often because it's the state fossil, so sometimes they learn that. I finally just, convinced myself people will think it's a bug if they don't know it's a trilobite, and bugs are awesome, and that's just fine.
Well, we have Brooke Norstedt on with us. She's assistant director of the UW Geology Museum, and the museum and Trinan Farm Corn Maze and Pumpkin Patch partnered on this year's maze theme. It's an ancient marine creature and Wisconsin state fossil that is the trilobite. Brooke, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. Hi, Angie.
Hi.
So you did some arm twisting, perhaps, with Angie to get her on board with the trilobite?
Perhaps a little persuasive argument. When she came to the museum, we had a bunch of trilobites to show her and, talked about some of the things we've done in the past. But it's been really fun, and I'm glad that she took a risk by bringing us on this year.
Well, tell us, Brooke, what is a trilobite, and how did it become the state fossil of Wisconsin?
Sure. Well, so trilobites are extinct. They're not around anymore, even though they do look like bugs, and they're related to bugs and crabs and shrimp. And they swam in the oceans. They were in the oceans. They went extinct about 250 million years ago. So if you think dinosaurs are old, trilobites are older. They were around for a very long time, and they were really diverse. They lived in kind of any environment in the ocean. They were up on shore near, where the sunlight would come through the ocean. They were down deep. And they kind of look like a pill bug. A lot of people, when they look at them, they're like, oh, it looks like a roly-poly. some of them, the one that's the state fossil, so we have a specific trilobite that's our state fossil called Calumny. And I always say it's a perfect Midwestern trilobite. It's very modest looking. No big spines, no crazy eyes. And so the one that's in the maze is another trilobite called Sororus. And I think that one was a little more attractive to Andy, too, because it had these spines and, you know, kind of more interesting features for people to get lost in, frankly.
Yeah, there seems to be a lot of switchbacks almost when you look at that spine. Is that right, Angie?
Yeah, the legs and the body of the trilobite, there's a lot of segments, and I knew that would be challenging for people, but in a good way. So
Brooke, have you attempted the trilobite?
I have. Yeah, the director and I actually last weekend went in, made it out successfully, and then challenged the students that were there with us to try and beat our time.
What was your time?
I think we made it out in 28 minutes. That's right, I think. Yeah. So they
were you jogging
us.
Or something, or walking?
We were walking. We were trying to figure out. When you navigate the maze, you're going through piece by piece. You're gathering pieces of the maze at different mailboxes. You get pieces of the map. And so we wanted to see what it was like. And those segments are kind of tricky. You're like trying to figure out, well, are we, you know, down near the bottom of the trilobite, or are we up near the top of the trilobite? Where are we at? But I loved being in it too, because there's so many other things besides the trilobite, and I really enjoyed hearing people navigate by saying, "Oh, are we over by the stone tool, or are we in the microscope?"
So, is the final representation pretty a fair representation of the trilobite?
Yeah, it is, absolutely. Yeah, and I think there was a little bit of relief on both of our parts when, you know, Angie revealed the design to us, and we were like, oh, it's a Sororus. We know exactly what trilobite that is.
Well, I had a great moment when I said to Brooke, so what species did I create? Brooke was like, well, I don't know if I'd like pinpoint the exact species, but I just, you know, I was kind of looking at all these pictures of trilobites and trying to figure out one that looked classic, but also, you know, interesting. So,
sure, yeah. Sure. And Brooke, remind us the significance of the trilobite in Wisconsin.
Sure. Well, these animals lived here, and, you know, trilobites can be found on every continent around the world. But in Wisconsin, you know, it is the specific kind of trilobites, columnae, is our state fossil. And, you know, it's one that can be found here. And, you know, we take people out fossil collecting each summer. And every year we go to a quarry and, you know, we find lots of different fossils of sea creatures. But, you know, every year somebody finds a trilobite. So they're a little elusive, but it makes for a fun quarry when you're out fossil collecting. And, you know, what I love about trilobites too is that, you know, any fossil really transports you back in time. And so these really speak to a time when Wisconsin was covered by water, which is just, you know, it's fun to think about. I think that's the power of geology, is getting people to kind of time travel in their minds back to when, you know, a particular spot looks really different. So, you know, if you're at Trinan Farm and you're lost in that trilobite, you can close your eyes for a moment and you can think about, you know, going back in time and being swimming in a shallow tropical sea with trilobites swimming around you.
Ooh, nice visual. Yeah. Well, Brooke Norstedt, thank you so much for joining us and giving that history of the trilobite. She's assistant director for the UW Geology Museum. The museum and the Trinan Farm Corn Maze and Pumpkin Patch partnered on this year's maze theme. Brooke, are you going to be arm twisting on any other designs in the future? When does your lobbying begin?
I know, right? No, I'm really pleased with how things have worked out. And we're actually up at the farm on the weekends through October. So we have museum folks up there noon to 4 on Saturdays and Sunday. And we have a replica of the world's largest fossil trilobite.
Oh, wow.
So you can go visit the world's largest corn maze trilobite, and then you can come see the world's largest trilobite.
Wow. So this corn maze, Angie, gets, you know, you get a bit of history, you get some geology.
Yeah, it's great. The
education.
Theme turned out really great. People are really interested in many aspects of it. And that's what we want. We want the theme to be interesting to people so that, you know, first of all, our staff can talk to people and really engage them, and people like to learn about things. And so the trilobite was perfect.
Well, Brooke, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, have a good morning. Thank you.
You too. We're talking corn mazes in Wisconsin this hour at 800-642-1234. Angie Trinan is here with us, and she has a corn maze in Lodi, a family corn maze that covers 15 acres featuring the trilobite design this year. 800-642-1234. What is your favorite corn maze in Wisconsin? Lead us to it. Let's now go to Chris in Franklin. Hi, Chris.
Hey, great show. I have to confess that we come up to the Trinan corn maze every year since I found out about it. Actually, my grandpa Rolke owned the farm just east of you. And the value-added farming is such a blessing. So I wish that they had had some way to keep the farm, because I wandered those hills and woods as a child throughout that area.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah.
There's such a connection to the land.
Yes, and a lot of the farms in our area have been in people's families for many generations. It was, you know, back turn of the century, or, you know, starting in the 1850s, that this part of Wisconsin was farmed by small farmers, a lot of immigrants. My husband's family is from Germany, well, you know, long ago, and it's still in the Lodi area. Like in many places around Wisconsin, there's many small farms that have a lot of historic significance. And our farm does have the original buildings. Like our great, our red barn was built in the 1850s. Mm. And a lot of the buildings were built, you know, in the late 1800s. And that's really great for people to see. But as the caller was saying, that it's nowadays a small farm is too small to support a family, especially trying to raise crops for cash. You know, dairies are maybe a little different. There's certain types of farming that you can get by with a small acreage. But my husband grows corn, soybeans, hay, and now pumpkins. And in order to have that farm be productive enough for us to live off of it, the tourism aspect is crucial. The thing about value-added agriculture, which basically means that you are not just selling your crops on the commodities market, you're not really just tied to that market, you are doing something else. You know, with our business, a lot of it is marketing and being creative and giving customers a really, really good experience. So there's a lot we have in our control as far as then that translates into our income. Whereas in a lot of, you know, other farming, if you're going to farm corn and the price of corn is low, well, you know, what can you do? Not much. So that's the thing about the value-added agriculture. It has allowed a lot of farms to remain small and in the family. I mean, there's many other ways to do that, but it's a great one.
Have you seen more farms turning to these other options? I know pizza farms are out there, and certainly during this fall harvest time, we have festivals on farms and the experience of perhaps even milking cows. Do you see more farmers going these avenues?
Yes, I think that the corn maze is becoming a thing in the late 90s, and certain people kind of broke the ground for that and started to create fall farm experiences that became traditions. And so once you've been to a farm, especially in the fall, and had a good experience, you might try some other ones. And I think the customer base is building, has continued to build for many years. And that's that helps everybody who's in the business, that customers are like, yes, we can go out to a farm, or we can go out to a vineyard, or an apple orchard.
You never know what shape corn mazes will be in from the air. They are true artistry on the ground. We're navigating dirt paths that twist and turn. a few dead ends here and there. Fortunately, there are usually maps and even flags to signal for help. We're talking corn mazes this hour in every corner of Wisconsin on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend. You join in now, 800-642-1234. Back after this news. Reader's Digest named it one of the eight most insane corn mazes of America. The Trinan Farm is a 15-acre corn maze, but you could trek 6 miles just trying to get out. Reader's Digest goes on, quote, but the tricky puzzle isn't the most impressive thing about Wisconsin's largest maze. The artwork is. Angie Trinan is behind that artwork. She stays with us on this edition of Wisconsin Weekend as we crisscross the state talking about our favorite corn mazes. You can join in, 800-642-1234. Send your email to ideas@wpr.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's go to Sarah now in Fond du Lac. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I have two suggestions for interesting corn mazes that are up between Fond du Lac and Appleton area along Highway 151 on the east side of Lake Winnebago. The first is it's a very young kid-friendly maze. So for those that are younger and don't want to be as much time in the corn maze, that's called the Little Farmer. And they have a lot of young kid-friendly activities up there. It's a nice little local hot spot that a lot of people go to this time of year. And then the other is just up the road from there, there's the Meyer Farm. It's spelled M-E-U-E-R. And they have a more intricate corn maze for those that need a little more challenge. They have two sides to it, too. One is a little easier. You can get through it in about a half an hour. And the other one takes a little bit longer. I think we were in there about maybe an hour and 20 minutes for the second half. And that one has a theme every year. This year, the theme is Elvis.
That's great.
I love it. Yeah. And Angie, there's like a corn maze for every taste, huh? Yeah.
Well, and I think the owners, you know, you have to find a maze theme that gets you interested, because when you as the owner and managers of the farm are interested, then that enthusiasm spills over and your guests get excited too. So yeah, I can see the Elvis theme would really be a fun theme.
What have been your great themes over the years, your most popular themes?
Well, we've done all kinds of different things. We did a gecko, we did a dragonfly, we did a mermaid, but when we did Icarus, so we did the Icarus myth, that really gave us a lot to talk about. We would explain the myth, and you know, kids would know it more than parents, though that was pretty great. Kids love that. And that was where we were like, okay, themes going forward need a story, something really substantial to talk to people about that will interest them. And so there's, you know, like the mermaid was great, but we didn't have like stories about the mermaid really. Whereas like the trilobite has a lot to talk about, and you know, that's one of the considerations we have, is what is going to get people interested.
Yeah, and then unicorns last year.
You got to. Yeah. Well, last year we had the theme was killer baby unicorns. And the way that came about is my husband and some of the staff, you know, they love horses. We have horses, and they're like, make a horse. And I'm like, well, I don't know if that's interesting enough. And they're like, well, make a Pegasus. I'm like, well, that's better. That's a lot better. Started looking at images, and then I'm like, oh, unicorns, because they have like this, you know, weapon, this lethal weapon on their foreheads, and they're kind of a meme thing. You know, then there was so much fun stuff on the internet, and then I'm like, well, a unicorn on its own is not quite interesting enough, but what if it was a killer unicorn? What if it was a killer baby unicorn? And then, yeah, that was pretty, I mean, we had a lot of kids. Although some of the littler kids were like, why does it have to be a killer? I'm like, well, I don't know, it just does. But you can pretend it's not a killer.
And how do you know when you've got it right? When you know the aerial views of the full-grown plants are going to be stunning, you know, how do you know?
Well, when I'm done with the design, I usually love the design. I mean, every year when I start the design, I think, oh, I've thought of all, I've used up all the good ideas. There's no more good ideas, which of course, always come up with something. But the moment when we get some photos of the maize after it's been cut into the field, so the corn is still just really short, but we take a drone up and take a look. It's so great. I mean,
Do you have your own drone?
Yes, yes. And so, yes, having this business is an excuse for me to buy a drone and fly it around. So that's really great. But that first photo is awesome. And it always looks like the plan. The cutters always do a good job, but it's still like kind of nerve wracking. I'm like, oh, I hope it looks good.
Yeah. Like, okay, here it's coming back to us. Here are the photos. What is it going to be like?
Right, right. Because like if it's cut wrong, if there's the trails are not in the right spot, I mean, you can correct it in some ways. My husband and the crew have had to transplant corn at different points because of a little like, oh, this trail doesn't belong here. And if it's a crucial trail, then they will do what it takes to fix it up. But often I can just kind of change the map a little bit if there's a little
error. Yes. Tweaks here and there. Yeah.
This year there was some transplanting of corn.
Wow. But how high does the corn need to grow then? Or do you have an ideal height?
Well, when we are cutting the maize into the field, ideally it's less than a foot tall so we can see the grid. But then we just let it grow and we've got really rich soil. So this year it's like 12 feet tall. I don't know. It's really tall.
High as an elephant's eye.
Yes. Yes. It's probably a tall elephant. Yeah.
That's fun. And that way, you know, people can't really see over to, I mean, they can truly get in this tunnel-like atmosphere.
It's really best to have a maze that is really lush and green. And so you can't see from one trail to the other, at least not until late in the season where it starts to kind of dry and shrivel. So we'll plant corn specifically for stalk strength and for it staying green for as long as possible, as opposed to growing corn most efficiently to sell the corn. We want it to be dried down and harvesting now, but we don't want that for the maize. We want it to be thick.
And how long do we have for the maize in this season? Okay.
Well, we keep our maize open until the middle of November. So we'll close after the second weekend in November because November can be really nice and there's more time to do the maize. We do stop sending people to the pumpkin patch after Halloween because nobody really wants that after Halloween anyway. But the maize remains open.
And what happens to the corn when the season's over?
Well, we'll harvest the corn.
Okay.
It's not the most efficient way to grow corn, but it, you know, it's definitely something we can harvest.
Delayed gratification.
Right. One more little thing before we close down for the winter.
Well, as we begin to wrap up, what are some events that's happening at your corn maze or any special things happening here as we, you know, get into nearing the end of the season?
Yeah, well, the biggest thing is, as Brooke noted, that we have the UW Geology Museum get staffing a station where you can see the world's largest trilobite and other examples of trilobites, and also of the other items in our maze. We've got the maze is actually a cabinet of curiosities, which means we've got a lot of geology related items in there. We've got galena, which is the state mineral. We've got the honeybee, which is the state insect. So we've got a lot of things to look at. On the weekends, we also have horse-drawn hay rides out to our pumpkin patch, which is really fun. We've got a lot of draft horses that we use for that. So, yeah, our weekends between now and Halloween are busy and hopefully sunny and beautiful fall weather.
Well, you've had really warm weather in recent weeks. Well, Angie, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for coming in.
Oh, this has been really, really great. Thanks for having me.
That was Angie Trinan. Angie and her husband, Alan, own Trinan Farm. That includes a corn maze that covers 15 acres. Trinan designs the corn maze every year. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Crystal Chan grew up as a mixed-race kid in rural Wisconsin. She's a professional storyteller. Here's her reflection of feeling at home in the cornfields.
My childhood home in Oshkosh lay on the outskirts of town at the edge of a farmer's field. It was in and beyond this field that I would tromp and discover the mysteries of the world, how the corn would burst forth from the earth, grow tall, bear abundance, and then turn dry, and how the little creek that ran through it would swell and foam in the springtime rains. As I grew older, Oshkosh started to burst forth from its own boundaries. One day, a middle school appeared where the farmer's field had stood. At first, I was dismayed. How could a middle school just plop itself down in the middle of the silence? But soon I found that on my evening walks, I could go down to the school when it was dark and silent, and I could lie down on the school's warm blacktop, look up at the starry night sky, and in the middle of the parking lot, the mosquitoes wouldn't be so thick. There, where the stars twinkled and the moon shone and the corn stood tall and strong, I could dance under the heavens, totally obscured from any human eye, and the school building would keep my secret. I moved away from Oshkosh in Wisconsin and found a new home in the middle of Chicago, of concrete and traffic and strictly regulated flowers. While my mother stayed in Oshkosh, she moved from my childhood house and was no longer surrounded by corn. Actually, even my childhood home itself was no longer surrounded by corn, as a subdivision with new houses and curving roads formed a buffer between my old home and the wild, mysterious world. One day, a couple years ago, I went to a writer's workshop, an event that took place at a woman's house in the Madison area. It was an overnight event where we would stay at people's homes for the weekend. I was the only one who was struck that her new house ran up against a farmer's field. After dinner, I went for a night walk. And of course, I went right up to where the road met the field, and I listened to the rustling of the leaves and inhaled that unmistakable scent of corn. "Do you remember me?" I whispered to the stars and the moon, and to my surprise, tears instantly sprang at the back of my throat. More than half a lifetime had gone by. "Do you remember me?" I asked the corn. The stars twinkled and the moon shone, and the corn stood tall and strong. "Yes, of course," they whispered. "Welcome home." And so I danced.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. It's a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. The Morning Show is produced by Keely Boltina. Michelle Johnson is executive producer and provided technical direction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and you can find Wisconsin Weekend each Friday at 6 here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.